Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Hello, you're listening to Zed Games, Australia's favourite gaming radio show, coming at you live on 4ZZZ FM 102.1. Or you might be listening around the nation thanks to the Community Radio Network or on Zed Digital. I am your host, Razor, and this week I'm joined by my illustrious colleagues. Firstly, the lovely B Bravo.
Yo.
And the unmentionable Jack Cringy Cringannon.
I'm not sure how to feel about illustrious colleagues and unmentionable.
I was just picking adjectives out of a hat.
Sure. Did you want junior reporter? Is that...
I keep an open mind, you know? I love the English language. Such a good language.
Got a great show coming up for you over the next little while. Jack, you've been playing Tales of the Rays.
Yeah. It's a Japanese role-playing game, except it's not a turn-based game. It's sort of like more action towards like Final Fantasy 15. Might have played that one. But it's on mobile. And I'm going to talk about it because you might think mobile, bad game.
I don't think that.
Well...
Who are you talking to?
No. But like when you try and port a console game to mobile, it usually can backfire sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
B, you've been playing Uncharted The Lost Legacy.
Yep, just girls being pals, murdering thugs.
And that could be the final installment of the Uncharted series, right?
Sure.
Yeah, could be.
Wow. That doesn't seem like it's possible at all. But
you don't think so?
I mean, never mind. That was a spoiler for Uncharted 4, if you haven't... Never mind. Okay, continue.
Jack, you've also got a little interview for us.
Yeah. It's about a retro gaming market that was on at Albion this weekend. I spoke to the people that organized the market, as well as the owner of the cafe, Café de Soit. I spoke with them about why. Why did you do this? And they had a lot of very interesting things to say, so stick around for that.
But before all of that, the weekend gaming news headlines with junior reporter Jack Cringy Cringannon.
Thank God. PlayStation and Xbox gamers could soon be playing each other in-game, according to statements made by a Microsoft rep this week. The rival companies are reportedly in talks to allow crossplay, which would break down the corporate-imposed barriers that have historically prevented players of both networks to interact in-game. Earlier this year, it was reported that Sony had rejected the notion of crossplay, expressing concerns about the quality of the player experience as well as online safety.
I want this.
You want this?
Well, like, how many times have you been on just, like, trying to find a game, especially with something with multiplayer, and you're waiting for, like, you know, 5 or 6 minutes? I was going to say 2 or 3 minutes, and then that sounded too low.
First world problems.
But, yeah, it's, like, super first world problems. But, like, you're waiting, and you're just, like, especially if it's, like, a certain mode or you know, something that
like
not
a
lot of player...
Game.
Yeah, like, not a lot of people are at, but, like, more Xbox people are playing it or whatever. Mm. Like, I think it's a great idea. Like, I don't understand why. Other than, I guess, the safety. But
Yeah.
Money.
I'm against it.
Why?
Because those filthy Xbox gamers don't deserve a place in my house.
Where is candy when you need her?
That's not an actual reason, though, as much as...
Like, the actual reason is more or less on Sony's side. Because at this point, like, Minecraft is going to be... It was announced recently that it was going to be crossplay between, like, Switch, Windows 10, Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's some hella crossplay to get Nintendo on your side. Sony doesn't need to because they're making hella cash. Money over fist. PS4 is flying off the shelves. Continues to. Xbox One X is somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Probably best you do. Mm. I don't know. I play both. I enjoy both. I think that it would do well for some games. Like, Rocket League is the obvious example where there's just, like, so many people and there's no real difference in terms of the quality of the player base or the quality of control. Like, if you bring up keyboard versus mouse, like, what are Rocket League players going to do with a keyboard and mouse, you know? In that sort of instance, it can work. But in a lot of others, it's sort of like, this might not be such a good idea.
Well,
but not because Xbox players are second rate, just to clarify.
Isn't this just crossplay between the Xbox and the PlayStation, though? So it's not even, like, one controller is better than the other, like, other than, like, how you feel about it. It's not a keyboard versus mouse thing. It's just people against people, really. Like, I don't think either controller
you know,
has a...
We're all one people, really.
Love is
both
love.
Both Xbox and PlayStation gamers, there's no need for these.
I do love in
barriers.
That story, though, the corporate-imposed barriers. I mean they are corporate-imposed.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if that does kind of how that shakes out and if we do get crossplay. fingers crossed, except for Ray.
Yeah. No, yeah. We'll see. You know, hopefully those walls stay up because, you know, Xbox gamers are the worst.
All right, what's the next story?
The writer behind the seminal PC series Half-Life has published a synopsis of the story for the unreleased Half-Life 2 Episode 3, prompting speculation that the series may never be concluded. Mark Laidlaw published the story entitled Epistle? I hope that's not a mistype, right? Entitled
Episode 3.
Episode 3 to his blog.
Epistle.
It is Epistle?
Oh, it actually is Epistle? Goodness, okay. Entitled Epistle 3 to his blog, saying he did so as an emotional release. The series has been put on hiatus despite no official word from developer Valve since Half-Life 2 Episode 2 was released in 2007.
How is this that it's suddenly prompting speculation that the series may never be concluded? Let's see, it's been about 10 years. I mean...
Ray, are you okay? Are you feeling good? Are you very keen about Half-Life 2 Episode 3 at all?
Look, I'm keen for any kind of statement from Valve regarding the matter whatsoever. I think it's incredibly disrespectful to put out a three-part series and only publish the first two, and then just, you know, 10 years later, just say something. Just say, hey, it's going to happen, or more likely, hey, we sort of gave up on this 10 years ago, sorry. Just so, you know, we know. I think it's a courtesy that could be extended.
I feel like we're the friends that your friend has stopped talking to you, and you're just like, maybe we're still friends. And it's like, no, like, episode 3 isn't coming out. Except, it's not talking to us anymore.
Your friend is a billionaire and isn't interested in hanging out with you anymore.
I mean, that's a classist thing, and we're not going to talk about that.
Because, you know, when Valve used to make games, they used to make very good games.
Yeah, right now, very good games.
You know, since... Steam, their game publishing service, has made them mega rich. Like, they're, you know, they're raking it in.
Well, yeah,
they don't need to make games anymore. It's just like that friend that got the good job and suddenly he's not interested in hanging out with his part-time wage slave buddies anymore.
We're not talking
about
that either.
Hey, buddy, you're too good for us, huh?
We're not talking about that
either. Then Valve's ghosting us. Valve is, like, ghosting all of their fans, you know? It's like that friend that ghosts you.
I feel like I'm missing something here.
I think he's projecting. I think that for this story in particular, there are some very interesting sort of, obviously, conspiracies out there. But one outlet online, The Know, actually did a story on this a little while ago, speaking to what, let's say Valve is holding back on this because of fear of commercial backlash. Let's say a bunch of Steam users sort of boycott and go to, let's say, Good Old Games, for example, right? They basically broke down what kind of hit Valve would cop if Half-Life 3 wasn't perfect. And they made a very compelling case for, like, you know, we have shifted as a company. We were a development company. We did publish. We're now a platform holder. We now have huge stakes in the esports industry, which has since exploded. I think that it makes sense from a marketing and sort of commercial perspective, but that is never going to make it any easier for the people who are genuinely heartbroken that Valve is ghosting them.
That's it for the Weekend Gaming News headlines. Thank you very much, Jack. Now we're about to launch into a review of Tales of the Rays. It's a mobile game. It's a JRPG.
Yes. Jack? So the Tales games have always been console games since, like, back on the Super Nintendo or the original Nintendo. It was the Famicom in Japan. The series is always, it's kind of mixed sort of Japanese RPG themes and like storytelling tools or tropes with much more of an action focused battle system. And from the beginning, that kind of separated it from the outset, where, like, Final Fantasy was... where Final Fantasy was all about that turn-based battle.
Yeah.
Tales was like, nah, none of that. You want to have actual action. You want to feel involved, not playing an entire menu for 40 hours.
That was good. I remember the first couple of games on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
After playing JRPGs for a while, you know, they're kind of boring. It's good to have some action.
Yeah.
You know, good story, good action. It's a good classic combination.
Yeah. And so they've always kind of been pretty niche, but they have been far more consistent than Final Fantasy games of late, because Final Fantasy 13, 14, the joke that 15 was prior to its release, the inconsistent...
What are you talking about 15? 15 was good.
How long did it take for that game to come out, dude?
a long time, but it was
prior to its release.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Continue.
No, it was frustrating that the sort of the JRPG you always thought of when you think of JRPGs, Final Fantasy, had kind of stumbled through the 360 PS3 kind of era.
Yeah.
13 was met with a lot of mixed reception. Its sequels following out afterwards were, and 14 was a train wreck. Tales has been consistent, but remain niche, unfortunately. They've kind of ventured out onto like PS4 and now PC, and Tales of the Rays is the first one on mobile devices, and it's basically another fan fiction kind of situation where the writing is pretty lukewarm, the characters are pretty lukewarm, the main characters, but the appeal that Tales of the Rays brings is sort of in an all-stars game. So it'll bring protagonists from Tales games back on like the 360, on the PS3, on the PS2, even further back. If you were invested in the series prior, it has a reason from the start to get you involved. And that reason is you have an opportunity to spend more time with these characters that you would have prior spent like 60 hours with. JRPGs can take well north of that. How long have you been playing Persona 5 for?
A few months.
We don't talk about that. Too long is the correct answer there. But yeah, the concern that I had going in was that the battle system was going to be kind of shot in the foot. It wasn't. In terms of loading out equipment and supporting systems, like leveling up and all the rest of it, has kind of been simplified. Not quite as much as like Fire Emblem Heroes on mobile, but yeah, kind of simplified, which works for a mobile platform.
Yeah.
The battle system itself is still very robust. So you're sort of moving on a plane with the enemy that you're fighting with, and you can tap the right side of the screen to attack, and then you can actually swipe in one of four diagonal directions to initialize like sort of arts, sort of special abilities. Most of the time, these are physical attacks if you are playing a character that specializes in physical attacks, but if you're playing a mage, you swipe in one of four directions and you can do healing spells, you can do offensive attacks, all that kind of deal.
Okay, so you said before that it brings together heroes, protagonists, characters from the whole long-running Tales of franchise. You've been a fan of this series for a while, have you?
For a while, yeah.
Was it exciting seeing all these old characters like come together in the one story, or did it feel like too fan service-y?
It is 100% fan service-y. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not... I think that at the beginning it is kind of disappointing to be like, well, you guys haven't really put in the time to, whether this is on the translation team or on the original script, the characters brought in from other games do feel a little bit out of place. Yuri from Tales of Vesperia on 360, that was the first game in the series that I really got into. I'd since sort of gone back, but yeah, like he's written in sort of an awkward kind of way. One of the main characters from Tale of Graces F that came out on PS3 a few years ago, she's kind of written in an awkward way. And the main protagonists are no better. They are sort of a tool to assist in delivering the fan service. You can clearly see that they were like, well, how are we going to try and mesh this together and make a cohesive plot? It didn't really work, but it also doesn't really matter. Tales has always excelled in delivering a robust battle system, a lot of supporting systems as well, and unfortunately that was kind of compromised in the port to mobile, but I think that if they were kind of compromised on the systems, that would have made sense, because no one's going to have the time to sort of delve deep into really, really intense like stats and all the rest of it on mobile. Yeah. The battle is still fun, it's still engaging, and outside of like a few pay-to-win opportunities, it really is just a few. It feels very well balanced, actually, and it is kind of fun to be able to play in the style of characters that you have on other games.
Sure.
Is it fun like just on like the RPG like point? Like, is it better if you know the story, or is it like, oh, I like RPGs and like this is okay, I don't really need to read everything?
Pretty much, yeah. Like I tried reading everything for like the first hour or two, and then I was like, okay, it's trash. Moving on, because the battle does like the battle system and the mechanics there are enough, I think, just to play the game by itself.
As well as that, the mobile platform isn't really suited for long-winded JRPGs with epic storylines and like reading walls and walls of text.
It can
stuff.
Like, as I think, if you are interested in that, there are definitely plenty of games like Square Enix have been releasing Final Fantasy games on mobile for ages. Mm-hmm. Mind you, they're like $20 or $30 a pop. This is a free-to-play game I probably should mention as well. Sorry, on Android and iOS. But yeah, the story, not particularly worth the effort in terms of trying to keep up with it. It's fun. It's good fun. And if you're familiar with the system or if you're into like action JRPGs in general, like Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 or Final Fantasy 15, I think that there's definitely a lot here to love. And in terms of the way that the game is structured, it is in small bursts. You're playing like 5 or 10 minutes to get through a stage where there's like 4 or 5 enemy encounters. You get to the end, you get all of your rewards. And so it's very instant gratification, like in that sense. The only issue that I think is really worth knowing going in is that it asks a lot of your mobile device and a lot of your connection. So basically, it's a 3 gig game. It's 3 gigs on mobile.
Jeez.
Maybe a bit short of that, maybe 2.5, but between 2.5 and 3 gig. For what it looks like, and we're looking at footage now, it doesn't look too dissimilar from a PS2 game.
Mm.
And on my mid-range phone, it's performing fine, which is kind of what you want. You don't want like a PowerPoint segment. But it also requires an internet connection almost at all times.
Why?
Because of the potential pay-to-win stuff. So I should clarify, I haven't put a crazy amount of time into the game, but I put a decent amount of time into the game, and the pay-to-win elements haven't 100% crept in. You've seen them like kind of like, hey, how's it going? You want a little extra, a little bit of boost? And I'm like, no, thank you, moving on. And then you have the fun, and you close the game, and you go and do more work.
Okay.
You need the internet connection at all time when you're start, when you log into the game. It can take potentially 2 to 3 minutes to log in, get all of your rewards, get everything, and actually go into the field. Once you finish, you need to actually have that internet connection to finish the quest and collect all of the rewards, and then you're able to back out. So if you're not on a stable connection, stable 3G is fine, stable 4G, you're totally fine. But if you're in kind of a spotty area, you're going to experience some tough times.
Yeah. Is the paid content limited just to the combat stuff, or is there story content that's blocked off?
I am unaware of any story content at this point that is behind a paywall. It is sort of, it from my experience, mm-hmm. you have 10 to 15 to 20 stages in a quest with one of these old protagonists. You finish that, you're like, hey, we saved the world, or we saved this world. Sure, story. We saved this world, move on to the next one. So you have, I believe that there is plenty of content here to keep you busy. It certainly kept me busy longer than Fire Emblem Heroes did. In terms of paid content, paid story content, I haven't experienced any. And I think that even if there is some of that later on, it offers enough content for its price tag of nothing.
Okay.
The pay to win elements are at this point still pretty low key after playing it for like 1 or 2 months, on and off. But, I think that if the devs wanted to continue to balance this, I can't imagine that they'd be getting too carried away with anything even towards the level of Fire Emblem Heroes again. It's one of the easier comparisons to make because it's like, let's port a traditional style game to a mobile. That seemed kind of cheap after a while. Kind of like, okay, now you have to pay up. And I'm like, no, there's not enough substance here. Even if you do decide to pay, I think there's plenty of substance here.
Tales of Rays is available now for iOS and Android for free. Fantastic. Thank you much, very much, Jack, for that review. We're going to hear some music now before we return. You're listening to Zed Games. You're listening to Zed Games on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM. I'm Razor with B and Jack. Music we were just listening to was taken from the soundtrack to Always Sometimes Monsters. It was Laser Destroyer Team with Have Fun Dying. B, you've been playing Uncharted The Lost Legacy for the PlayStation 4.
Yes.
Standalone game.
Yes.
Way to shift gears there.
What? Going from killing monsters to...
Have fun dying. Hey, B.
It's fine.
So Uncharted 4 came out last year to great acclaim.
Yes, because you got to pet a lemur and it was amazing. There were some really good... Papers, Please jokes in there. And, you know, the story was really good. Just a really nice sort of two brothers getting to know each other after being estranged for a few years, going into remote jungles and deserts and, killing thugs and treasure hunting.
Just family things. Just brother
family things.
Nathan Drake was, of course, the iconic hero of the Uncharted series. Mm-hmm. The guy, very handsome, Harrison Ford-like, with always one half of his shirt tucked in.
The man every man wants to be.
Yeah, navigating various falling debris and trains and things like that. And climbing mountains and stuff.
So much climbing.
But his story came to an end without spoiling anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is someone else's story now.
This is Chloe Fraser and Nadine, where you should be able to remember them from the series. I don't. Nadine, I remember from Uncharted 4 because she was this awesome, she was a badass.
She was a badass, yeah.
Yeah, so she had this sort of like mercenary company that you went to sort of grips with a lot. She like can kick butt so well. So she had a mercenary company that sort of fell apart pretty much at the end of Uncharted 4. And then there is Chloe Fraser, who, do you I know she was a love interest, I feel like, in Uncharted 2.
I believe Chloe was, yeah, in Uncharted 2, she was a love interest,
yeah.
But that's where my knowledge ends. Ray?
Okay.
You're an Uncharted nerd, aren't you?
No.
It's
fine.
Cool.
I played a couple of them.
So they know, they have obviously interacted with Nathan Drake in some way. Also Sam Drake, because Nadine sort of has a kind of, doesn't really like him because I think he ended up like double crossing her, something like that. Anyway, nobody likes the Drake boys, and that's the important part.
Huh.
But we have gals being pals, and they're going after the Tusk of Ganesh, who is an Indian god. I played this all day today, and like it's just steeped in just like Indian mythology, which is pretty cool. It's just he lost it against I forgot his name. It was Parashurama. Anyway, and
The Tusk of Ganesh. It's not a tusk. It's a person?
No. The tusk of it's a tusk. It's an elephant's tusk.
Okay.
Because Ganesh is like it's the elephant god.
Right.
You've seen Ganesh. Like,
yes.
He's like,
yeah,
in
course.
Like a Buddha, like, you know, in the like cross-legged state.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an elephant man. So anyway, they're looking for the literal tusk. There's a lost city in India that obviously has it. So you and Nadine are going to go because you're going to use the money to then, she's going to get her company back, and you are just a treasure hunter.
So you're playing as Chloe for the entire game?
Yes.
Cool.
So yep, you play as Chloe, and she's really cool. She's Australian. It's
in
kind
a
of
good way or
no,
bad?
No. She's it's that's what she is. So it's like there's a lot of backstory. And like I felt like I missed a lot in the beginning of it because they don't really set it up. Like you kind of just go into the action of like moving around this sort of Indian village, which was sort of cute because you met this little girl who kind of helped you sneak into a truck. But like I didn't really get the connection between Nadine and Chloe until like hour 3 when we're in the jungle at the temples doing all the puzzles and they're starting to talk in between the truck. So the story seems a bit, it's not as strong as Uncharted 4 was.
Right, okay.
But it is game of the year because you save an elephant and you get to pat it and then you get to ride the elephant for a while and take a picture with it. So game of the year, that's the end of my review.
Girls being pals on the elephant, got yay.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Very good. It's an Uncharted game. It is, but it like they're using the whole like you have a partner thing, to kind of build it up so it doesn't feel like one person just off in the jungle doing the puzzles by themselves.
Right. So you have a computer-controlled companion?
Right. So you have
the whole time?
Yeah, you have Nadine, who you went on to the side of a building, and you're like, oh, there's a person there. You run off, go to somewhere else, and she's just hanging there. And there's the thug that just goes underneath her and is just like, those girls were here somewhere. And it's just one of those hilarious things like from The Last of Us where,
yeah,
you know, she makes a noise or she's right in front of one of the mushroom people and like Ellie just dancing around and like nothing happens until you like twitch and the mushroom people are on you. Anyway.
That's pretty cool.
Hilarious moments.
The Last of Us was another game by Naughty Dog who did the Uncharted series. And because there were two characters in that, you were only controlling one, but you had this sidekick Ellie that would follow you around and sometimes help you out. It really gave the story some depth and and momentum and also character development, having the two characters along for the journey instead of just one hero.
Yeah, so there's...
made exposition of the storyline easier as well.
Yeah, yeah. So there is the... Like I said, the exposition doesn't come until later. So you're just kind of, like, there with Nainine for a while, and then it doesn't come until later why you guys are out there in the jungle together. You just know that you're treasure hunting. But there's a lot of really good sort of, like, Gao Pali bonding, like, just talking about stuff. At one point, I guess it's not really the Bechdel test. It doesn't really pass that too well. That is the test. If you can have two female characters in a room together without talking about guys, about relationships, it doesn't pass that, because there is a point where Nainine is like, so you and Nathan, and it was kind of cute though.
That's kind of the question that I wanted to like. First of all, the Indian mythology stuff is cool and refreshing compared to Uncharted 4?
Yeah, because I feel like it's a little bit more...
Exotic?
It's a little bit... Huh?
Exotic?
No, what? No! Why am I going to say that? Oh, gross. No, it feels like more people kind of like can recognize those characters a little bit more. Like, I feel like I kind of vaguely know about Ganesh and so like you're just like, okay, that makes sense, and like there's a lot of reality, there's a lot of like actual mythos to all of this, despite the fact that buildings are coming out of water and these women are hanging off like cliff hangings on their fingers that are like obviously totally fake, like you can't do that like for hours.
We see heroes chasing after Christian related artifacts all the time, you know, like the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant and other things.
Yeah, just to clarify, I wasn't saying that this topic is more like more worthy than other, like whatever was in Uncharted 4, because I didn't actually play Uncharted 4.
That was Pirates.
Yeah. Oh, okay, right.
That
cool.
was Pirates. Yeah.
That wasn't me trying to be accidentally racist. the other thing that I wanted to ask was, because like the writers on Uncharted 4, I believe, I can't recall if whatever, that doesn't matter. Basically, do the characters feel like they're real people?
Yeah.
Are they written in a way that's natural and not sort of awkward and forced and uncomfortable?
No, they're totally real. Like, they quip at each other, and it was great because like when they were talking, like, I don't know why I remember this, but when they were talking about Nathan and it was like, did one of you shut up at the same time, or was it like did you guys just talk over each other? Because like Chloe's one of those people who also talks a lot and also kind of like has something to say all the time, where Nadine is a bit more of like the muscle, so she doesn't always have something to say, and like usually she's just like just simple things. So it's really cute. I like it. Yep. Like, it's good if you have that itch to play an Uncharted game. There's the puzzles, there's the side quests with the treasure, like the collectibles, and then this other side quest where you can get this like thing. It's this bracelet, and it helps you find treasure if you're really into that.
It's still like a well-rounded sort of package.
There's nothing new with the gameplay. It's the same Uncharted 4 kind of gameplay, the shooting, the climbing, driving the car, and like doing, like, it's all the same, slightly different story. I don't know, it scratches that itch, that Uncharted itch, because sometimes I want to play an Uncharted game like that, and it's a nice short Uncharted game. Yeah.
So Uncharted The Lost Legacy is available for PS4.
I'm pretty sure it's online only.
It's digital only, yeah, so you can't pick it up in store.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. Get it?
Yeah, get it? How long did it take you to play through that?
I'm almost finished. If I hadn't done like the little side quest thing, it probably was only like a 4 or 5 hour game, and it was about $55.
Okay. So as far as entertainment to dollar ratio goes, it's pretty low.
Is that good or bad?
Well, 4 hours of $55, I don't know.
It's probably like 5 hours, but yeah, like I'm slow at games. I didn't get to finish it because of the stupid thing with they wouldn't let me go stealth. I hate shooting in that game.
Also, it's at retail.
Is it?
Yes. 55.
At retail also?
At retail, yes.
Okay, cool. Well, I got a digital because I don't have room in my apartment for physical things.
These are just discs.
Anyway.
Thank you very much, B.
So when you think about a couple of ways to relive your childhood and have that nostalgic moment, there's not many things that can deliver that for you. And the best way to deliver that is through retro gaming.
That's Joel Dorber, the person behind the Brisbane Retro Gaming Markets. He's been running these events over the last year, including the one that was on last Saturday at Albion.
And what we're doing is we're running the largest retro gaming market in Queensland. And we've gone to about, it's probably our fifth market now, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the way it started was basically we saw that there was a need for this kind of stuff. It's the best way for people to relive their nostalgia. The way it started was I'm a collector myself, so I collect everything gaming. You know, I have pretty much every console you think of. A lot of people wanted to buy things from me, and I didn't really want to sell it like a typical collector. Didn't want to get rid of my collection. So, you know, what I found out that was there's a lot of people want this stuff, they just can't find it. So that's where it kind of started to go, you know, I'll sell a little bit off, sell a bit more, and then starting to grow into something quite big. So I had enough of my personal collection to start moving on. People who hold this stuff are collectors, and they don't want to sell it. Everyone holds on to it, you know, they don't want to sell their stuff. I mean, you think about the various consoles released, and it's been started all the way back with Atari in the 70s, and since then there's been so many consoles, thousands of games and whatnot, so there's so much out there, and you've got some very specific collectors for different things. And I've started growing this, and recently connected in with Escobar to look for a better venue to run this stuff. And yeah, today's event was awesome.
The markets were held alongside a cafe in Albion called Café de Soit. It's filled with figurines, plushies and comics, but the real draw is the retro gaming consoles on show. Escobar Page is the owner of the cafe, and he told me more about the cafe's beginnings and what he wants to do with it moving forward.
We've got everything from arcade machines, consoles, figurines, comic books, you name it, we have it. It was a really good opportunity for us, especially starting out, because we are quite new, to try and team up with Joel into, you know, offering the actual space for the market. And today has been absolutely fantastic. Like, we've killed it, and I'm pretty sure Joel has as well. So my first business is window tinting. I've been doing that for many years. That's, you know, that's the money maker. That's the bread and butter. The cafe came about more so because my accountant told me that I had an addiction and I should stop spending money on consoles and figurines because I will send myself bankrupt. To which I turned around and said, well...
No.
Yeah, no. I try to make it a business expense. So everything that you see in the cafe is my own personal collection I've had for years. You know, like there's some that I've bought recently, but more so I ran out of room at home and I needed to sort of, you know, like expand the space. And I figured let's make a business out of it and try to sort of, you know, show my collection out to the world instead of having it locked away, you know, in my bedroom or, you know, or in my house where only like a few people see it. And I had a few different ideas, and then the cafe was the final idea. Like I woke up this morning and I'm like, we're going to be too overrun. There's going to be like a massive wait time for coffee. Everybody's going to get upset over it. But no, like there was a few things that I thought of, you know, over the past few days and even on the day to sort of try and make it as easy as I can. Like I've got all of my baristas on board today to. You know, battle the immense crowd, and even like good ideas like having one of my baristas come out and like take orders on the big line that, you know, that stretches down the street, so they're at least caffeinated while they're waiting and they don't have to, you know, lose their spot in the line to come in. It's just common sense more than anything, but everything's been really good so far today, so I'm super stoked with how it all went.
Like I said, Escobar, the good thing is that you've got a really different market here. You know, people kind of think gaming's just geeks or whatnot, but you've got a mix of everyone coming along, you know. Like, there's so many different people, you know, different ages, demographics, geographics. People are coming all the way from, you know, hours and hours drive to come here today, you know. So we've got a really, really unique, it's a really different market.
Like, for us, it's fantastic because, you know, like, we get the bodies through, you know, people are talking about us, we get the reach. For Joel, you know, he has, like, a massive space to work with. It's all undercover.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy. Nobody's sunburned.
It's a great location as well. We're right near the city here. Plenty of street parking.
Plenty of public, you know, transport.
Yeah, right near public transport. You know, it's a well-known area, Albion, so we're in a prime location, you know, and... The thing is, a lot of people want to come to these events. We just need to get sure we've got a way to get everyone inside, you know. Because we have, our events literally have the largest collection for sale in Australia. From what I've heard from a lot of collectors out there, we have probably about 5,000 to 7,000 items available, you know. We've got the best prices available. and we've got some really good support. So, you know, it's a perfect location for us to set up. So it's all a win-win situation for the both of us, you know. It's the first time we've done it, but based on the success of today, we'll keep rolling that out and just getting bigger and better every time.
We heard an interview with the guy behind Brisbane Gaming Markets, Jack.
Yeah, Joel Dorber, yep. Behind the Brisbane Retro Gaming Markets. That one was this last weekend. There will be another one in December. No date nailed down yet. You can find them on Facebook. And Escobar from Café de Soit out at Albion. Window tinting business. I don't know how that is, but the cafe is full of consoles. And that made me happy.
That's super cool. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Zed Games, guys. Just about out of time now. But on behalf of everyone here at Zed Games, including B...
What did I do? I was
here. We'd like to wish you a great week. We'll be back next week at the same time with more gaming goodness. We're going to hear now some music. This one is by Brainbow 50cc. And it's called Casio Rave. Catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.